Good morning. It's Thursday, December 19th, and you've tuned into The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson. Lonesome Jack here in the studio today with no Jim Healy or Carrie Logan to keep me company. But I do have, I'm going to have three guests right off the bat, and then another guest or two coming in partway through the show to join us. Right now, I'm here with Tim Bangle, the director, Corey Repass, Ebenezer Scrooge, and Angel Rogers from the Christmas Carol that is going on this weekend on stage, a Christmas Carol, I guess, on stage at the Panetta Theater. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But first, I'm going to talk about the weather. It is currently overcast, and downtown, it is 34.3 degrees exactly currently, and the high today is about 39. There's a 10% chance of precipitation, probably rain. The snow level right now is 2,600 feet and elevating to 4,000 feet in the afternoon. 20% chance of rain overnight. The low is 31 degrees, and let's see. The snow level actually goes up even higher to 5,700 feet after midnight. Tomorrow, the high is 41 and partly sunny, we're expecting for Friday. 20% chance of rain overnight. The low down to 30 degrees on Saturday. High of 42, 20% chance of rain. And Sunday, high of 40, 20% chance of rain. Monday, high of 40, 20% chance of rain. Okay, that's a pretty consistent forecast. And looking ahead to Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, we got rain on Christmas Eve is the current forecast, and a chance of rain on Christmas Day next Wednesday, about 40% chance. Well, so much for a white Christmas, I guess. I wish I had other news to report, but who knows? Things change. You know, this forecast may not be perfectly accurate. And right now, I guess we're looking at a weekend that you can least plan to get out and do some outdoor activities during, so that shouldn't be too bad. A Christmas Carol, written by Charles Dickens in 1843. Nicely done. This man has done his research and brought to the stage of the Panetta. I would guess it's been performed on stage at the Panetta before, probably many times, but it's been a little while since we've had a live Christmas Carol on the stage. Tim Bangle, good morning.
Good morning.
And when did you decide, and how did you decide, that a Christmas Carol was going to be the next thing that that you brought to the stage?
Last year, Keeley and I talked about me doing a Christmas show after we closed Murder on the Orient Express.
Mm-hmm.
And Christmas Carol actually wasn't my first choice. It was Miracle on 34th Street.
Hmm.
But the adaptation that was available, I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
So then I found a different play, and Christmas Carol seemed the logical choice after that.
Yeah. Miracle on 34th Street would be, well, I don't know. I guess they're all challenging, I suppose. The adaptation, I haven't read the article yet in the Reader, so I'm myself and our listeners are going to learn something here this morning. The adaptation is, who did the adaptation and when? Where did that come from?
The adaptation that we did, I landed on for the show, was written by Peter Delorier.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's out of London, actually, mm-hmm. or somewhere in Europe. Most of the performances that have been staged of his show are all based over there.
Mm-hmm.
My assumption is that's where he's located.
Okay.
I didn't really do a whole lot of research on him.
And you've changed the, did he change the setting, or did you change the setting?
We did.
You did. Okay.
Yeah.
So the setting is not,
it's not 1840s. No.
Is it London?
It is London.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
We kept it in the same location, but we have changed the decade,
okay,
or the century even.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas present, or when we first meet Scrooge, we're actually in the 1970s.
Mm. Okay.
And that's where Angel Lives is kind of the 1970s. And Christmas Past takes us to the 20s, 30s, and 50s. And then we kind of took a little bit of artistic liberty with Future.
Yeah.
And we're pushing Scrooge to the 2000s with Christmas Future.
Cool. See, now that makes sense. I like that you can do that by setting in the 70s. You don't have to, rather than like setting into the present day, you don't have to conjecture what is, you know, what are things going to look like in 2045 or something like that. You can say, no, we actually knew what that looked like.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, very cool. Corey Repass is here and plays Ebenezer Scrooge. Do you keep the name Ebenezer? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. It's the character is still called Ebenezer Scrooge. Do people ever raise an eyebrow to hear of an Ebenezer Scrooge in the 1970s?
Mostly they just mispronounce it.
Yeah. And Angel Rogers, the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Yes.
Okay. Set in the 1970s. The Ghost of Christmas 1970s.
Yep.
Cool. How did you guys come to the play? When did you decide to go out for it? And did you go for the roles that you ended up getting? Go for it, Angel. Oh, yes.
Thank you. For me, I was actually doing another show. I was doing a youth play by Keeley Gray. It was Alice in Wonderland, and I played the Cheshire Cat. And Tim was actually, were you doing lights or sound? And he saw me during the rehearsals and the show and everything. And he, I think you told me that you saw, like, you really like my performance. And I remember you said my voice is really unique. And I really took that to heart. I thought that was really cool. And then he told me to pick out a good monologue for the show because he saw the potential in me, but he wants the, or he wanted the other cast panel to also. And so I picked Something Worth Fighting For by Samwise Gamgee in Lord of the Rings. And they loved it. Absolutely loved it. And I actually wasn't there for callbacks because I did the audition and then the next day I went to Florida for like 2 weeks. And so I wasn't there for callbacks. But they loved my performance so much that I was considered for Christmas Present, and I got it. It was really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Corey, your familiar face on the stages around town.
Yeah, I've been in quite a few.
Did you know you were going to be Scrooge? Did you plan to, or did you just know you were going to be in the play and kind of accept what they were going to cast you as, or did you go intending that you'd be Ebenezer?
I walked in with a hope and a dream in my pocket that I would finally get the lead role.
Yeah.
And it's finally happened.
Okay.
I've never been the lead. I've always been second to the lead or something like that.
Yeah. Right. You were Watson, weren't you?
Yes.
Yes, but not Holmes.
Yes. Nope.
Now you're Scrooge.
Now I'm the Scrooge.
And basically, I would imagine that puts you pretty much in every scene.
I think I'm off stage for a whole of like 30 seconds.
Yeah. I imagine most of our listeners are pretty familiar with the story, but you are, it's all about you and your memories and your, is it a dream or is it, you know, what your magical experience on Christmas Eve?
That is the question.
Yeah.
We like sort of drop hints to just about everything.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask you what, if you have yourself an interpretation of that later on, but you, so when did the process start for you guys, the actors, the cast? When did things start, I guess, happening? How long have you been preparing for this play?
We started rehearsing probably around the end of August, right?
Yeah, wow. It was the first week of... The general cast started the first week of September, but yeah. We have dancers in the show, and their component started the first week in August.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Dancers, cool. How are the dancers incorporated into this show?
Well, there's a lot of spiritual elements already written into the show with the three mm-hmm. primary spirits. So we wanted to expand upon the world as a whole. So the dancers represent additional spiritual beings. Mm-hmm. And through the use of dance, that's their language that they speak with.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it really came from. It's just expanding the world of the spirits.
Cool. I mean, it's, incorporating a different, different elements of the performing arts into, which is not new for you. Is there other media involved in this one?
I'm glad you brought that up. That's what we did with Murder. We had as many aspects of storytelling that we could throw in there as possible. And we did the same with this one. We have a lot of music. We've treated this as kind of a musical, even though we don't sing.
Mm-hmm.
The dancing elements. We also have puppetry.
Ooh.
So, I guess we can openly talk about this now because we're a couple days away, but there's no Christmas future on any of the posters because our Christmas future is a puppet.
Oh, cool.
And it moves its head and it nods and its arms are independent of its body and the dancers control the arms and Corey wears it.
So oh, it's, interesting.
It's kind of this 8.5 foot tall.
Wow.
Yeah. Being that we put on Corey's back.
Will be striking to see on the stage, I suppose. I'm trying to remember the story. Yeah. Future doesn't have, he's silent.
Right? Yeah.
The ghost in the story is,
And that was kind of why I landed on using a different way to portray Futures, because why cast somebody who doesn't have any lines?
Just to point at things, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's very cool. That'd be very creative, clever. Good. I'm excited to see how that turns out, I guess. Let's talk a little bit about the general credits of the show, because we already mentioned Keeley Gray, but this is, of course, a LPO rep production. That's the Lake Pontarée Repertory Theater Company. And Keeley Gray, how did she get involved? How did you decide that this was going to be an LPO joint, or was that kind of a foregone conclusion right from the...
Well, she and I have started to kind of... planned seasons ahead. Mm-hmm. So I asked her if I could do one show a year because I've got the film projects as well. So one show theatrically is probably the most I can accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of helps her because then she doesn't have to direct every show.
Yeah. You've got puppetry involved, puppeteers or dancers and puppeteers. Who else is in the kind of, other than the people that we're going to see on stage, who else is involved in putting this whole thing together?
We have Val Moore, who has been kind of the props mistress. She built the puppet and she's procured or gathered all of the props you see on stage. Lori Buck from Studio One was one of the choreographers we used, as well as Suzanne McLam, who was in Murder on the Orient Express with us. She's a movement and choreographer as well, movement coach. And then we have Vicky Turnbull as costumes, again. Fabulous costumes, bell bottoms to leather jackets to... even some cyberpunk looking attire for the 2000s. It's very
cool,
very visually stunning attire. And stage managing, we have our first time person that I work with at Dyer out at the airport. Kristen Smith is our stage manager, And we did something new with the show. I took on assistant stage manager Steve Hammond, who played Hercule Poirot for us last year. He's our assistant director.
Nice. That's a full. I don't know. It's a full group, I guess. A lot of people behind the scenes putting this thing together,
and it needed it.
Yeah,
like it's a massive show.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess this would be. We're gonna find out, but there's a lot of. You know, a lot of sets, I imagine, are, you know, Scrooge in the story, the written story. So he's moving from place to place pretty frequently. We actually did years and years ago, we did a radio version of it. But in that, you don't have to change the sets. You just say, now that, you know, this scene has different voices in it and we're taking place in a different spot. But if you go to the Cratchit's house, I imagine you got to.
It's mostly props. We have one big set piece that we utilize throughout the show, but we mostly transition into different scenes through prop
clever
swaps.
The character of Christmas Present is, I guess, open to some interpretation. How do you interpret what do you bring to that character? What is it a A fun-loving Christmas present? Is it a what kind of ghost is it?
She's extremely fun. I love her, and it's also really fun because I get to like fully be myself. I don't feel restricted at all. I see her as kind of a reflection of Scrooge.
What about the departure from the usual take on Christmas presents?
I'm not a pimp. No. Very much so.
You're listening to
I'm not an old man.
Why? This is Panic Community Radio, and we're talking with Angel Rogers, the ghost of Christmas Present, about her character in the upcoming production of Lake Monterey Repertory Theater Company's A Christmas Carol. Also present, Corey Rapass as Ebenezer Scrooge, and Tim Bangle, the director. I'm sorry to interrupt. Yes, you were saying about your character.
I hope that was okay for me to say.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I am not an old man at all. I am more of a hippie.
Okay. I was going to ask about the costumes. Mm-hmm. Are you in the 70s? Are you set right there?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Am I allowed to talk about my costume?
Yeah.
Okay. I have this really cool, comfy fur coat, and it's, well...
Nice.
It's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, like jean fabric and fur from Vicky, who was a hippie. So that's actually her clothes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I have some bell bottoms with like flower designs on the side, and it's awesome. And I wear these sandals, which is awesome. Like just the whole thing, it really gets me into character, and it's so awesome. And the makeup is incredible. It's so fun.
I forgot to mention Britt Hagen as our makeup artist.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and you get to be pretty much free on the stage. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Running around as sort of, as 1970s flower child, sort of. Mm-hmm. Cool. Very neat. Corey, the character of Ebenezer Scrooge is pretty well defined in the... I mean, the popular imagination.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's sort of a cliche. Scrooge has entered the lexicon as sort of a grumpy, as much as a Grinch has. So, or more than even, he's the original Scrooge, the original spoiler of Christmas. what can you bring that's different about Ebenezer Scrooge, or do you just try to, you know, channel all the performances that that go back to the middle of the 18th century?
Well, mostly what I'm trying to channel is a badger. a grumpy badger. Because he's described as a bear, but I'm pretty short. So I'm more like a badger. So I've been like trying to embody a badger with everything I do, and I take on physical characteristics that I sort of drop throughout the show as he's learning lessons and losing his burdens.
Okay. A badger.
Yeah.
Very cool. I guess I can kind of see that. He's, kind of a hunched over. Radio isn't the right medium to represent it, but I can see your physical, the physical presence of that would translate well.
Yeah.
Do you have to go through a lot of makeup, or do they keep you pretty much in character? Because, I mean, of course, he's looking back at himself as like a younger man at some certain points and things. Do they change the way you look?
The only time my look is changing is when I'm sweating off the makeup. I do lose some wrinkles in the forehead as I sweat them off.
He's a pretty old man in the story. Is that consistent? Are you playing him as an old guy?
Or? Yeah, oldish, like late 50s, probably maybe early 60s.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that's old because I know people who would probably smack me for it.
Yeah. Old enough to at that time remember the 30s, I guess, because that's when you're going back to. Okay. I think I asked this already, but you said the decision decided in the 70s. You guys just came up with that on your own.
Well, I felt like the 1800s had been done.
Sure. Yeah.
Like how do you make the story of Scrooge's arc more relatable to the present time? And the 70s has a lot, and it has a lot to offer that's still very reflective of how it was originally written. Like they were just coming out of Vietnam, and the world was changing from that, and the music was reminiscent of a lot of the same or very similar themes that back in the 1800s they were dealing with, the poor, the perspective of how children were to be treated, shelters, workhouses, the way that the low and poor were considered in the society.
Do you, do you get explicit and say this is set in 1974? Or something, or is it mainly these are the costumes you've chosen, or do you have explicit things you're trying to say about the 70s, the past going back to the 30s and 40s going ahead to the turn of the 21st century, do you make it explicit in any way, or could it is it pretty much following the script?
Oh, as written, we follow the script.
Yeah,
Peter DeLaurier wrote, the time jumps within the script, and we just kind of crossed those off and put our own time in them. But he did spell it out, like what the year progression was within the text.
Do you have to change much as far as, or anything as far as like the language itself to update it to?
Yeah, that was something that Steve was very helpful with, Steve Hammond. Obviously, they didn't use lanterns in the 1970s. We had electricity and flashlights and stuff, and the denomination of money caused by inflation was different. So, the script would call out shillings and pence and stuff like that. And in the 1970s, money had more value.
Yeah.
So we updated that a little bit. But past that, it's still the same.
It is a timeless story, I guess.
Yeah.
You can pretty much set it whenever, and this will be an interesting way to see it. The show is, we got to get through the details here. I should have started with this right off the bat. When can people see it? Where can they see it? How can they get tickets? That sort of thing. This is for who? Tim?
I was like, Corey, take it.
Corey. Okay, when's the show? It's at the Panada Theater. We know that.
Yes, at the Panada Theater. Opening night is tomorrow.
Wow.
That show's at 7.
Yeah.
Doors open at 6.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we have 2 shows Saturday and 2 shows Sunday. That's an LPO rep first.
Hello. I'm writing this down because I'm, that's maybe going to change my plan on when I'm going to see it. What are the times?
Saturday, it's at 2 and 7. Okay. And Sunday, it's at 1 and 6.
And 6. Okay. Tickets available through?
Either panada.org or LPO rep website. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And at the door, too.
And at the door.
Okay. You'd doors open half an hour ahead of time?
An hour.
An hour ahead of time.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you guys pretty much ready to go at this point? Are you? Is there another rehearsal? Or are there still things you're trying to work out before lights go up at 7 o'clock tomorrow night?
We do have one more rehearsal tonight, and then that's it.
Okay. Okay. Is anything likely to change at this point? Tim, are you trying? What are you looking for from this dress rehearsal?
Consistency, mostly, yeah. Tonight. Is everybody locking in? And, yeah. I mean, we've been introducing all the different technical elements all week. And so the cast has been wonderful, allowing us to change the way that the lighting looks or change a couple positions on stage based on, the puppet. And so we're pretty much ready. We still have a few things to work out tonight, but.
Are you rehearsing on stage at the Panada?
All week we have, yes.
Nice. That's exciting. What do you think about doing it at the Panada Theater? Is that going to be a cool venue to see the show at?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Just the space oozes magic as is, and then you add some of the magical elements that we're incorporating. It's fantastic to watch.
Yeah. You got magical elements, and my question to you is it all a dream that Ebenezer Scrooge has? What do you think?
I don't know.
Corey, how do you play it? Is it all a dream, or is it? Does this really happen to him? Does he?
I've been going back and forth on that.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, we play on little bits of a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like certain things leave and stay sort of as if we're still in Scrooge's room. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you see certain things outside of his room. That's like, oh, that they weren't there.
Yeah.
What are they doing here? Oh, huh. Yeah. I don't want to say too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to leave some mystery.
Yeah. Because I don't think there's anything in the story that explicitly says it couldn't be a dream, other than maybe he learns things that he wouldn't otherwise have known. Like maybe I don't think he maybe knew Tiny Tim's name or something, and then he knows it based on know, what he learns in the dream, but who knows?
Yeah, I don't think Scrooge even knew Cratchit had a family.
Yeah.
If I may.
Go ahead. Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of see it as it's like, you go to bed and then you wake up in your bed at the beginning and at the end. I kind of see it as us spirits are taking your spirit around to these different places, but without you dying. and that's how we're seeing everything, is your spirit being there in those different times. That's how I see it.
Is and I guess you either you're a figment of the dream or you're an actual spirit, and in your case, from your perspective, it doesn't really matter.
It's one of those storytelling things. Yeah. Like if anybody's seen Inception, at the end of Inception, he spins the top, and that is never answered, right? So I don't think we necessarily need to answer that question, but we can have people talk about that question. What do they think? And it kind of spawns conversation.
Yeah. Do you have a narrator or anything like that? Or is there anything framed like that?
Okay. No.
It's all told right there on the stage.
Yep.
Cool. Before we play a little music and bring in our next guest to talk about Festivus, also at the Panada Theater, any other How big is the cast? Who else is in the cast? And I know we don't have the cast list in front of you, so I hate to put you on the spot and ask you to name
them. It's over 30. I don't remember what the final number is, but with the dancers, you know, it's over 30. It's a big cast. Yeah. I have one more thing to say before you cut us off here. We are accepting food donations at every performance that is going to get donated back to the Bonner Community Food Bank.
Excellent.
Here in town. So please bring your non-perishable food or even, you know, fruits and vegetables. I think they take those because they have a little store thing that they got going over there. So we'll have drop boxes for people to drop off food.
You have just reminded me, this is the last Carefoy morning show before Christmas, I think. I think on Christmas Eve there'll be, it'll just be some kind of recording, and then on Christmas Day I don't know that there's going to be any show, and then I'll be here next Thursday, and it'll be the 26th already. So this is our Merry Christmas show, I suppose. Corey, this half hour has flown by, hasn't it? Corey Repass, Ebenezer Scrooge. Anything in closing from you? Come see the show, I suppose.
Come see the show. Uh-huh. Share your theories online.
How grumpy is he at the beginning?
Maximum grumpiness. Yeah. I tried very hard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. is he an accountant? Is that how you play? Because he runs a counting house, right? Mm-hmm. Is he working in like an office? He's the CEO, more or less, of a small accounting firm, I imagine.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. My thought is that he took over after Marley dies.
Yeah.
It took over a lot of things after Marley died.
Angel Rogers, yeah. The Ghost of Christmas Present. Are you anything you want to say to the audience to encourage them to come see the show?
Yes, come see the show. Uh-huh. It is the most fulfilling play that I've ever done in my life.
Cool.
Everybody working on the show, cast and crew, are incredible. And the atmosphere is just so accepting, kind, and loving. And we are really united. And I really feel that we will come together as a community with this. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like we need that right now.
Tim Bangle, the director, here comes the big weekend.
Yeah.
And the tickets are still available for all five shows.
Yeah. There are some left.
Okay. And you can go and see it at the Panetta Theater on Friday, on Saturday, and or on Sunday.
Or multiple times.
right before Christmas, people will leave the theater ready to celebrate, I suppose. Feeling full of the Christmas spirit.
I hope so.
Okay. I think that's going to do it, because we got to get Caleb in here to talk about Festivus. I'm going to play a song from the 1970s to change gears a little bit here. Not a Christmas song. Thank you guys very much for coming up.
Thanks for having us this
early morning. And we're going to play a song that entered the Billboard Hot 100 on this date in 1970. Elton John's first American hit. It didn't go to number one. It got as high as number eight. But it came out on this date in 1970. And one of the voices of that decade was Elton John. Here we go with your song.
It's funny.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live.
Till 9. You're listening to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY, and that was Elton John, wasn't it? With your song off of his self-titled album, and that hit the U.S. charts on this date in the year 1970. Thanks to Tim, Corey, and Angel for coming in for the first part of this show. And now we are here with Caleb Keaton, the man behind, at least in our community, the second celebration, the second public celebration anyway, of Festivus. And I will say also, Carrie Logan is on her way down with the certificate that we awarded last week at this time. And Carrie, if you're listening, you can come right into the studio when you arrive. Please make yourself at home. The celebration is called Festivus. It comes from, well, tell you, Caleb, you tell us. Where does Festivus come from?
So Festivus is a made-up holiday from Seinfeld season 9.
Mm-hmm.
And originally it came from writer Dan O'Keefe, who came from a pretty interesting family upbringing himself personally. And so when he introduced it to the writers at Seinfeld, they thought this is instantly something that we can incorporate in the show via the Costanzas.
Mm-hmm.
Because for those of you who aren't familiar, the Costanzas are a very interesting family with very toxic dynamics, which blend in perfectly to the show itself, which really does not follow a lot of the typical, you know, societal trends and just the good cookie cutter like formulas. It's hectic, it's chaos. There's a lot of yelling, a lot of shouting, just a lot of different ways in which the Costanzas present as in a uniquely way charming, but and in a sad way, relating way that we can kind of view ourselves and our own obscure family dynamics based within the show.
It's funny that the holiday is pretty iconic and well associated with Seinfeld. It only appears in one episode, and yep. It's in that last season. You think of it and you think, well, it must have been an annual tradition every year or something like that, but it's not. It comes up in the last season. The Costanzas, like you said, are they're certainly in those later years more central to the show than Jerry's parents are, I think.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's Frank Costanza is the in-universe, in the fictional origin of the celebration. Frank Costanza comes up with it, and it's a response to the commercialism of the holidays, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you know, you've done your research, this was something that was celebrated by the writer's family, by Dan O'Keefe's family, or at least in some way.
Yeah. Right?
And most of the details it was a real life thing that they did?
It was a real life thing. Some of the differences, the poll was something that the show introduced.
Okay.
they actually, one of the things that O'Keefe mentioned was one of the symbolisms that his father would use was a broken clock tied up in a burlock bag, nailed to the wall. So, and he also said, the show also recognizes it as being on December 23rd.
Yes.
But according to O'Keefe's, it could happen at any time.
Yeah.
You know, it would just get jumped on him at some point around the holiday season. So they actually tamed it down for the show to make it a little bit more presentable.
Yes, a surprise holiday, which an element that I think they could have incorporated. I think that would have been good. That's such a funny element to me that it in real life it was just surprise. It's Festivus. Some of the other things incorporated are you got an aluminum pole instead of a Christmas tree,
right? Excellent strength to weight ratio, by the way.
you've got the speaking of strength, you've got the feats of strength.
Yes.
Right?
And yes.
This is how will you incorporate the various elements into an onstage presentation or of Festivus?
So this is the second reiteration of Festivus at the Panda Theater. Mm-hmm. A few years back, we just decided this is something that me and my friends have been celebrating for about 25 years now.
Mm-hmm.
What we, you know, the feats of strength traditionally have been with my friend group,
mm-hmm.
is essentially just wrestling matches that end awkwardly and uncomfortably.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing that to the stage can be difficult. For insurance purposes and, you know, just the fact that our bodies aren't what they used to be, sometimes that's maybe not the best idea.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're planning on doing this year is actually doing a different format. So, because the feats of strength don't necessarily have to be physical.
Okay.
Right? It can be a combat of wills. So, yes. What we're thinking this year is we're going to have a debate. Right? We're going to have a debate. We're going to pit one group against another. And I'm gonna save that for the show itself.
What we're going to be debating.
Because we have some surprise guests that are going to be included in the feats of strength. But if violence is the reason why you're avoiding Festivus, don't worry about it. It's not going to get physical this year.
It'll be physical violence.
But it will get awkward.
Okay.
So we're still going to maintain the spirit of Festivus in that way.
So there will be a debate, a live debate.
Yes.
As the feats of strength.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the main elements of Festivus that's appealing is that we're going to include a lot of audience participation.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be different contests throughout the night that the audience members are free to participate in. There's going to be, prizes given out. And oftentimes, who is determined to be the victor is going to be based on the audience. So you show up, your voice is heard, you really determine a lot of outcomes involved in Festivus.
What can you tell us, you know, what can you tell us? What details can you give us as far as who's going to be on the stage? Or is it all surprises? Or you got?
We've got a great solid cast. Mm-hmm. Lonnie Williams is coming back again triumphantly to portray Jerry. We've got Leslie Spawn and her daughter Maylee, who's going to be taking it up a notch this year. She won the poetry contest last time, but this year she's going to be on stage doing some roles. She's involved in theater. Mm-hmm. Just an up-and-coming talent. Lindsay Klein, who last time played as Kramer, is transitioning her role to George. So we are asking a lot of Lindsay and making that kind of transition because it's a, you know, those are two very different characters.
Mm-hmm.
But Lindsay's just chock full of talent. She's going to knock it out of the park.
Is that allowed according to Idaho law?
Idaho law?
Kramer to transition.
I think it's okay in Idaho. other states don't celebrate Festivus, but here in Idaho, it's a pretty pro Festivus state for the most part.
Carrie Logan's here, by the way, and we're going to explain why in just a minute. But good morning, Carrie. Thanks for being here.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking Festivus with Caleb Keaton, the organizer. So, is it a staged reading of what? What is presented? Is it the full episode? Is it just the scene?
Right. So the show itself, I think, really kind of gives like the allure of like an old school talk show, where we kind of just have we start out with some stand up monologue, just like in every Seinfeld episode. The airing of grievances, right, is a very central part of Festivus, and we have the audience write in different grievances that we read off of stage, and then we determine a winner there. There's going to be dancing. There's going to be some more poetry. The Seinfeld trivia is a big one because we've selected some people that have demonstrated skills in their knowledge of the show. And we are going to incorporate both the Seinfeld trivia game and questions from that, as well as questions we've derived ourselves, because last time it was pretty challenging. Like the Seinfeld trivia game is no joke.
Yeah.
But as far as the episode itself, there was some debate this year within the team. We had talked about writing our own Seinfeld episode with it kind of based in Sandpoint, which we had some good ideas for, but we didn't have enough to go off of, and we were kind of on a time crunch. We were talking about doing a different Seinfeld episode, which I think we might do in future years. This year, though, the second time around, You know, one thing about the first show was it was good. Like, it was pretty successful. We got some positive feedback, and honestly, surprisingly, I thought it went very well for something this ambitious and this unique and this different from something that we've, you know, haven't had a festivus like this on this scale. So we wanted to make sure that the second one was improved, but we didn't want to change too much or vary too much off of it. We just wanted to really refine mm-hmm. the product that we gave the first time around. So we are going to be doing the Festivus episode again.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
and that's start to finish the full thing?
Well, no. Or? So because we have a limited amount of people, we are condensing it.
Mm-hmm.
We're condensing it. There's going to be certain characters that aren't in the show to limit the amount of sets we have to do.
Yeah.
Much like the first time we did it, you're going to get the core of it, mm-hmm. but it's a more abridged version.
Yeah.
But it's going to be great. It's going to be funny. And again, the cast loves what they do. We have a great time every time we're at rehearsals and kind of throwing around ideas. So definitely anticipate just a funny, cheerful event.
You have, you must have a Frank and an Estelle.
Yes.
Okay.
So Frank is played by Jeff Klein.
Okay.
The reason he is casted as Frank is because mm-hmm. he has red hair.
Mm-hmm.
Estelle doesn't have as much of a role in the Festivus episode.
Mm-hmm.
My wife Britta Worley plays Estelle. Mm-hmm. She's not very gumptious when it comes to stage.
Uh-huh.
So we pretty much cast her because Estelle just has one line in this. It's a crucial one.
Yeah.
But it's limited, and it just kind of it fits and suits my wife's ability to limit her stage time.
Okay. Let's see. I know Kramer is there. He's central to the Festivus scene.
Right.
Doesn't he show up with a stranger, or does he show up?
He shows up now. So this is something that we're gonna have to change, because he shows up with the bookies.
The bookies. Yeah.
Okay. That Elaine is interacting with earlier on in the show. We don't have the bookies, so he's going to show up in a different capacity this time around.
Yeah.
I will be playing Kramer.
Okay.
Which is, something that is, you know, a big ask for me, especially following Lindsay's performance mm-hmm. last time around. But
do you have the slide down?
It's, mm-hmm. it's a lot of physical comedy. Mm-hmm. And I gotta be careful. Like, I gotta make sure I do it indoors, because it's getting slick out there. I don't want to like injure myself before Festivus. I don't know if you recall this, but last year George had like a messed up knee, and he was on like a roller
scooter thing.
The scooter thing that he had to utilize. But so we don't want to do that bit again. Mm-hmm. We're trying to keep me 100% healthy for the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough warming up as Kramer, because you know Michael Richards was excellent at that. You know,
put
physical
on.
Comedy.
Absolutely, with Heelys on.
Heelys.
Oh, you know, those wheeled
tennis wheeled shoes. Things,
yes.
Then you
if they come in 12s, I'll look into that. Uh-huh. Yeah.
They must. Okay. What else can we say about the kind of the run of the show? Any what other surprises do you have in store? Well, then they wouldn't be a surprise. What else do you have in store?
Well, you never know. See, that's the thing about Festivus.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to manifest.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is we are putting time and effort into this thing. But there's an element of Festivus that we don't want to lose in having it too clean cut.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there just has to be some randomness. There has to be, you know, things that occur that are unexpected, and you just roll with it.
I understand.
You don't want to have it, you know, to be so meticulous that you lose the thought of that. So, you know, I couldn't honestly predict the surprises, because they're going to come out of left field for me too.
Yeah.
And we'll just manage them and navigate them and enjoy them as they come.
Okay. It's you're doing this in partnership with the Sandpoint Reader this time around.
Yes.
Okay. How did they get involved?
Well, so Ben Olson wrote, he was helpful in allowing, first of all, me to write about Festivus in the Reader before mm-hmm. we actually had in the Panada, and then mm-hmm. was integral in promoting it the last time around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after the show, he came up to me and was just saying, hey, that was great. You know, one of the great things about Festivus, and when you start talking about Festivus and promoting it, the Seinfeld fans start to present themselves,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, I've been mm-hmm. dragging the Festivus pull around from business to business trying to promote this show. It's at Evans Brothers right now. It was at Matchwood for SantaCon. Mm-hmm. And every time I'm dragging the pull around, somebody will run up and be like, oh, is that the Festivus pull? Mm-hmm. You know, they get excited about it. It's a really interesting fan base. You know, it's something that there's certain, you know, cultural, you know, shows, movies, films, bands that for whatever reason just really latch onto you.
Mm-hmm.
I think Seinfeld is one of those shows that just really formed a strong fan base and has really over the years lasted into, you know, just interest and relevance in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
But the folks of the Reader are some of those people. Mm-hmm. They're excited about it. I think one thing is that, you know, what we're doing at Festivus is all of the proceeds are being raised for the Panada. And the Reader being, you know, a local community periodical is all about that. Mm-hmm. You know, really promoting community events, really promoting community culture. And so it just really went hand in hand with what it is that we represent and what it is that we want to accomplish, which is not just, you know, putting on a good show, but raising money and awareness to a really good cause in, mm-hmm. in the Panada Theater and community involvement mm-hmm. and participation.
Cool.
How long do you anticipate this going for? When does it start? And is it, what's your target audience? Is there an age limit?
So all of us have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be dragged to the show.
Okay.
Will they enjoy it? Probably not. You know, Kramer can mm-hmm. always, you know, spark some interest there.
Yeah.
It's going to be, as far as appropriate, Seinfeld was on air on NBC and, mm-hmm. you know, they were very tactful when it came to when they were talking about adult conversations and adult topics mm-hmm. to really watch their language and how it is that they presented them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be doing the same. But if you, it's really more for people that either grew up watching Seinfeld, picked it up later in syndication,
mm-hmm.
or just want to have a, you know, again, be engaged in a more of a live variety show mm-hmm. kind of atmosphere and enjoy that kind of thing and going to the Panada and experiencing something like that.
My neighbors are big Seinfeld fans, and their 3-year-old granddaughter is memorizing key lines out of the shows. And the only one I can remember, I don't remember the whole thing, and you'll probably mm-hmm. know what it is, something about a goat. Is there some line about a goat that's supposed to be really funny in a Seinfeld episode? Anyway, Paisley knows a lot of them. And I just remember it was something about mm-hmm. a goat.
There is a line that Kramer mentions in the Festivus episode where they're talking about cloning sheep. And he says, No, they're not cloning sheep. That's the same sheep. I saw Harry Blackstone do that with two goats and a handkerchief on the old Dean Martin show.
Maybe it was something.
So if
like
a 3-year-old
that.
Is saying that,
yeah.
I'm impressed. Indeed. We'll have to cast her next Festivus, yeah.
These pretzels are making me thirsty. I know that one. That's the line I remember. That is this. Well, it's one night only, right?
One night only. Festivus, we can't uh-huh. spread it out. There's no. Festivus is intense.
Yeah.
If there's more than one Festivus, I don't know how long we'd last. But it is December 23rd,
mm-hmm.
Panada Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Doors are at 6. Show starts at 7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things about opening early is people like to come in, get some libations. Also, you can start writing your anger grievances.
Mm-hmm.
The show is going to last an hour and hour 15 minutes, hour and a half, somewhere in there. Again, because mm-hmm. it's a live variety show, some things are going to kind of go shorter and some things are going to go longer. We'll see. I think it's going to be a good flow. Mm-hmm. We had a good flow last time.
Cool.
I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you? Are you going to go, Jack?
I'd like to. Now
that sounded pretty non-committal, Jack.
Now, okay, we've got Ebony. I've got the Christmas Carol this weekend, and I don't know. I don't know how to decide. I can't go to everything every night.
At some point, I have to bake some cookies too. I guess for the listeners, you have to choose between Festivus and the Christmas Carol. You can't do both.
No.
So this is the bidding war. Who do you care about more?
Let's find out. It's going to be interesting. No, busy weekend at the Panada Theater, and good for them. This is all of it produced right here in town. That's very cool. That everything that's going on this weekend before Christmas is it's all local productions. Caleb Keaton, you're the organizer of Sandpoint's second Festivus in 3 years or so not quite annual. Is this going to go on? Are you doing it next year, you think?
The thing is, you know...
Or it'll be a surprise.
You never... Exactly.
A surprise holiday.
We can't put anything down in ink here, but I... You know, one of the things that we enjoy about Festivus is just having the small traditional Festivus with family and friends. Mm-hmm. And so if you made it a show every year, you'd kind of lose that.
Yeah.
And you want to get to have those. But it's, you know, it's something I definitely, you know, take seriously and want it to be successful and raise some money for the Panada and continue to contribute to the bolstering of community arts and interests. Mm-hmm. And as long as that's the case, and as long as there's Seinfeld fans to go out and support it, we're going to keep putting it on.
Okay. Well, Caleb, thank you very much for bringing it to the attention of our listeners. If you were listening to the morning show 1 week ago, Caleb, I assume you were, you would know that Carrie Logan was here and we were chatting about what we could give our generous listeners in thanks for their support at this time of year. KRFY is, of course, a nonprofit, commercial-free community radio station that relies on our listeners' support to stay on the airwaves. And Carrie really came up with something here. This is not what I expected. What do you hold in your hands there, Carrie?
I am holding a fine, very fine certificate.
Mm-hmm.
KRFY Early Christmas Lights Certificate and Permit.
Mm-hmm.
To Celeste Grace for her contribution to KRFY.
Yes.
And I would read the whole thing, but I didn't bring my glasses and it's too small. So can you read it? It's a wonderful script.
Sure, I can. And it is framed.
Framed.
That is a gorgeous frame.
Framed by Dan Logan.
Oh, my.
Yes. Okay. Artwork by neighbors Cynthia Riopel, the one who has the three-year-old granddaughter.
The KRFY Early Christmas Lights Certificate and Permit to Celeste Grace for her contribution to KRFY. I should say also my mother is listening right now, and she thought she was going to be the first one to donate the requisite amount, and apparently... She claims that she was unable to at the time.
Yeah. Oh.
She couldn't make it happen. So she could have gotten this certificate.
Yes.
And I would have had to mail it to her. But instead, we get to present it in person to Celeste Grace. I, Carrie Logan, self-appointed mayor emeritus of Sandpoint, do hereby permit Celeste Grace the ability to light up her home and property prior to Thanksgiving in perpetuity and in violation of long-held tradition. The this permit is also considered an asset and may be willed, bequeathed, and passed on to heirs of Celeste Grace. This permit exempts Celeste Grace from any legal enforcement gone astray and government overreach. Awarded this 18th day of December 2024... Issuer, Carrie Logan, self-appointed mayor emeritus of Sandpoint, Idaho. And it is signed and dated as well. And there's attractive lights decorating the permit. So we'll have to get that in Celeste Grace's hands one way or another.
Absolutely.
Soon here. And I imagine it'll be hanging over her mantle place.
Prominently.
Yeah.
Or right next to the... utility box, her mm-hmm. power box on the back porch.
That would be another place you could put it. Yeah. My goodness.
Yes. Well,
this is really something in a handsome work by Dan Logan.
Yes.
On the frame.
Yes.
Congratulations to Celeste.
Yes.
I know the viewers can't see it, but I can't look away. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing.
It's spectacular. And
I must have thrown away my campaign stamp because I promised it was going to have the stamp on it. But I must have decided when my political career was over that I was getting rid of all that kind of stuff. So I don't have it anymore.
Well, the value is really in the document.
Yes, exactly.
Not the stamp itself. Yes. Yeah. I'm excited to see what Celeste does with it, when she puts up her Christmas lights and for how long they stay up, now that she has the unfettered ability to do it at any time.
Anytime. Mm-hmm. Anytime.
May I suggest, amongst the decorating, a Festivus pole?
Why not? And that could be, was Festivus always around the Christmas holidays, as far as you know, or was it, could it have been like any time of year?
Within the O'Keefe family?
Yeah, the
backstory. I mean, middle of summer.
Yeah.
With us, December 23rd.
Okay. Well, we've gone again and gone into the 9 o'clock hour, as so happens so often here on the Carefoy Morning Show. We're going to play Bird Note, which comes up next, and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long, including some Christmas tunes mixed in. And if I can find a Festivus anthem, I'll play that as well. Also, yes, I think my mother is sending me messages. She's very jealous and wishes. I think she just wishes she had tried harder.
Way to make your mom feel guilty.
Yeah, maybe next year.
That's a great Festivus move.
Okay. We will play Bird Note now. Caleb, thanks for coming in. Festivus is the 23rd. All weekend long is a Christmas carol. Lots to do. And remember, Christmas comes but once a year. Maybe we can go to both the Christmas carol and Festivus. Who knows? Yes.
Why not?
It's a wild weekend.
Celeste, give us a call if you want to come down and pick this up. Otherwise, we'll come by your house and hang it on your front door. Okay. Thank you very much. And here we go. This is 88.5 KRFY Ponderay.